welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. Well, today in the second hour, we are going to return to this very, very difficult topic of free speech and vaccines. I did a show on it last week where I was talking about what I described as the paradox of how free speech is being held up in some situations as a fundamental bastion of democracy, and we're told that we must support and endorse the satirical publication in France, and people are wearing the badges Je suis Charlie to show allegiance with the concept of free speech. But at the same time as that, we have incredible violations of the basic principles of free speech, which are so extreme that it feels like we are living in a society that is just split by contradictions. It feels that we're living in a society where there's a kind of a mental disturbance at work. And, you know, this has happened before in history. This has happened during the fascist eras in the 1930s in Europe. The same sort of mass insanity has taken over people at different times. And it tends to go hand in hand with the seizure of power by corrupt oligarchies and the way in which they control government as well as big business. And we see that merging of corporate interests and government interests, which of course Benito Mussolini described as the essence of fascism. And this, I believe, summarizes very, very clearly what the problem is with vaccines and speaking out and simply getting clarity about the real threats and the benefits, if any, of vaccines. Because if you don't follow the official line that is put forward by the AMA and the pharmaceutical giants who produce the major vaccines, if you deviate from that and you have a public platform, you are threatening profit. And this is the one thing they will not tolerate. And they will go to extreme lengths to maintain their profit. And they regard us, the customers, as really their property. Because again, the system that we are now living within is only capitalist in name. It is only free market in name. In reality, it is this very corporatist system where a few very large players have all the business tied up and all the prices are set and fixed. They're basically cartels. And there is no open market. There is no free market. There is no way to get another product or another approach even to, say, the issue of health prevention, disease prevention in children. The vaccines are put forward as the only solution, and a few companies sell the vaccines, and they sell them directly to the government because we live within a socialized healthcare system. So it basically all goes under Medicare. Almost all vaccines come under Medicare, so you don't directly pay for it, but you are paying for it through your tax. But again, what that means is you have no control and no say. You're just told to take the medicine, you know, and that's it. So this is the major focus of my concern today. And I'm bringing a guest back on the show who we've had recently, Dr. Vera Scheibner, a campaigner on vaccine issues in Australia for several decades. And we're going to talk through some of these topics. Vera, welcome back to Truth News Radio.
Thank you very much. Perhaps I may say what I feel that I am doing. I am actually a researcher, and I study medical literature and then share what I find out with people around me, whoever wants to listen. And I don't have any lectures anymore. I used to do lectures for parents, because it is actually the parents who can change the whole scene. Vaccination is not mandatory in Australia, and parents can accept or reject any vaccination. But the problem is that the actions of the government are unconstitutional and illegal, because while our constitution allows the government to provide medical and hospital services, it doesn't allow them to advertise or push or any medications, and doesn't allow Australian government to have a national vaccination scheme or national vaccination program. That is unconstitutional and illegal.
a national vaccination scheme would be something that they have in the United States, do they?
Well, in the United States, the individual states have different policies, but basically they mandated vaccination as a condition for enrollment to preschool and school. But of course, there are exemptions and waivers. So in effect, people have the right to refuse vaccination. But most people, and that goes for all countries, actually don't check their rights. And if you don't know your rights, you have no rights. So they don't check whether actually they really have to do it.
Yes.
And how to achieve those waivers or even exemptions.
Yes, yes, indeed. The knowledge of your rights is something that people really do need to study up on. And I think, you know, a lecture program just on that one topic would be extremely valuable. Let's talk a little bit about Cherie Tenpenny. Now, the news that's just come through in the last 24 hours is that all venues that Cherie Tenpenny had booked for her lecture tour have cancelled her because most of them are saying they just don't want to be caught up in a controversial topic. Now, of course, it's only controversial because these extreme groups have come forward with threats, death threats, I believe, against Dr. Tenpenny. And although the death threats, I'm sure, are anonymous, but the death threats are a part of a campaign that's also included complaints to the AMA, complaints to the government, and requests to the government for Cherie Tenpenny to have her visa revoked, thus tarring her with the brush of being an unwholesome person, a person of bad character. Now, what are we going to do to reset the balance of recognition that this is actually a free speech topic? Because what it appears that the lobbyists have done, and they've done it somewhat successfully, is that they've positioned Cherie Tenpenny into being what they would call a socially undesirable. And this this group includes a variety of different sort of people, but we might include Holocaust deniers in that. We might include a man who was a famous pickup artist who was teaching people how to grab women and choke them in order to, you know, kind of get dates. Now, Cherie Tenpenny is being basically conflated with these people who are, possibly some of them are, I mean, I would certainly agree with that last one I mentioned, certainly someone of poor character. But and we do actually have laws in place to protect our society and of people coming in from overseas. We do actually want to be able to revoke visas. I mean, what's your take on all that, Dr. Scheibner?
Well, first of all, Dr. Cherie Tenpenny is not an extremist. She is not a radical in vaccination. She is really just for freedom of choice.
Yes.
And freedom of information. She is urging parents to investigate easily available information about vaccines and then investigate their rights in individual United States or American states and then decide whether you want or don't want to vaccinate. Well, fair enough. She is not telling everybody don't vaccinate or anything like that. While the proponents of vaccination also are exaggerating the benefits of vaccination and exaggerating the risks of natural diseases. Well, first of all, as I said, I study medical literature. Well, all my information showing that vaccines actually don't prevent diseases and that they are dangerous and that natural infectious diseases are beneficial is published in medical papers, in the peer-reviewed reputable medical journals of the likes of Lancet, British Medical Journal, New England Journal of Medicine, Journal of Infectious Diseases. Even product insert for individual vaccines, they list, long list, the 90% or 99% actually of the product insert are actually reactions to vaccines going organ by organ. So Priorix, MMR vaccine, measles, mumps, rubella vaccine, lists colitis and other serious gastrointestinal problems, which researchers of autism actually identified as number one problem in autistic children. Then product insert for Tripedia, DPT vaccine, lists autism and SIDS as serious and quite prevalent reactions to their vaccine, which were surfaced during the post-marketing data collection. So drug companies actually are very liberal and very open in revealing the risks of their vaccines. So really, one has to ask the question, so where is the problem then? But the problem is that at the same time, and I don't know who organizes it, there are these fanatical groups that are pushing vaccination. The internet is full of them. And then the health departments, of course, and individual doctors. Individual doctors actually probably don't read product inserts, because when I have the opportunity to talk to individual doctors, they are very surprised by what I say. And another thing is that many doctors don't vaccinate their own children. So they must know that vaccines are not the best thing after sliced bread, and they probably see it in their patients. I mean, educated people who went through university studies, etc., I would find it very hard to believe that they don't know that when they inject any vaccines and symptoms occur, that they are actually caused by those injections. Because they usually run away from parents who come back and report reactions. They don't want to hear about it. The medical files mysteriously disappear. Now, that doesn't show innocence. That shows intent to cover up and to run away from responsibility for their actions.
And, of course, the perception that's been put forth about those from within the system who ever raise questions such as Dr. Andrew Wakefield is that, oh, well, you know, that man was struck off the register because he engaged in unethical conduct. And that's possibly something we might talk about after the break, but the question of ethical conduct on the other side of the equation is actually quite severe too, from what you're saying.
Well, with Andrew Wakefield, I had quite a lot of experience, even personal, with Andrew Wakefield. Well, first of all, that article in The Lancet that he published with 11 other authors, so it was not just Wakefield, it was 11 other people, was very mild. They actually said expressly that they are not saying that their observations, the gastrointestinal problems, etc., that they actually are the cause of autism.
We're just going to break. Sorry to interrupt. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We'll be right back after this very short break. Don't go away. Thank you with Truth News Radio, and I'm talking to my guest, Dr. Vera Scheibner, today. And we are talking about the vaccine controversy and the crisis for democracy that has arisen as a result of the effective banning of Cherie Tenpenny from lecturing in Australia. She hasn't been banned from the country yet, but there have been calls for her visa to be revoked. And we're just having a chat about the whole topic. Vera, perhaps you could just continue. You were talking about your knowledge about Dr. Andrew Wakefield. Perhaps just continue from where you left off, if possible.
So I met Andrew Wakefield twice. in the United Kingdom, and then during a conference on autism in the United States. And he was really very mild in what he was saying about the link, causal link between the MMR vaccine and autism. I actually tried to make him aware that he actually has to have a look at the whole vaccination status of children, because researchers found out that babies who died of CUTES after 2 months of age had flattened villi in their gut. In other words, already after the first DPT and polio vaccine, not before MMR vaccine is given, they had already a pathological finding. They had pathological findings in their gut. So with every vaccine, the damage to the gut and other organs, of course, it's cumulative, and MMR is just the last straw that breaks the camel's back. And number one, when you have this type of pathological findings after every vaccine, and then you have got tens of thousands of children all over the world developing the same symptoms of autism after the same vaccines, well, that can hardly be coincidental. That is the evidence of causality. That's how the causal link is established. But you see, initially, vaccination was a non-entity. I mean, the smallpox vaccine was not based on any biological or scientific research. Only God Almighty knows what was in those smallpox vaccines. It was probably very similar to Ebola. And we may address Ebola a little later. I don't want to deviate in different directions. And so smallpox vaccine was totally unscientific, totally wrong, and totally barbaric procedure, which was not based on any science. Also, biology and immunology didn't even exist at that time. But the same can be said about the other vaccines, which is basically the beginning of the 20th century, because at the beginning of 1900s, they were giving the typhoid vaccines prolifically. So typhoid vaccine existed. And Lancet published an article by an army surgeon, because the typhoid vaccine was given mainly to soldiers, to the army, who established that the injection of typhoid vaccines resulted in this negative phase of lowered bactericidal power of the blood, meaning suppressed immunity. And that's why so many soldiers developed typhoid after those typhoid injections. And this is published in The Lancet. Then there was, for a couple of decades, there was quiet on the Western Front, right? And then they started running around with diphtheria vaccines. And during the war, the early 1940s, Nazi Germany mandated diphtheria vaccine, and it immediately resulted in a huge outbreak, massive outbreak of diphtheria in the recipients of the vaccines. So by that time, they knew that typhoid vaccine caused typhoid. Then they established that diphtheria vaccine caused diphtheria. And even Nazi Germany actually stopped this diphtheria vaccination after this huge blunder, and it quietly disappeared from the scene. And again, there was quiet on the front of vaccines until 1950s, when drug companies started seeing dollar signs, okay? So because mass vaccination, of course, requires mass production of vaccines, and it also promises massive, indecent numbers of money earned, and I am using the words of Richard Smith, former editor of British Medical Journal, who write an article called "Is the Pharmaceutical Industry Like the Mafia?" And it is actually a foreword to the book by Peter Goetsche, a Danish researcher. He's actually in charge of the Cochrane research in Scotland, who published a book, "Deadly Medicines: How the Big Pharma Corrupted Healthcare." And both of them are describing in detail how this pharmaceutical industry is like mafia, earning enormous amounts of money and then corrupting politicians and paying doctors, etc., so that they push vaccines and they push medications. But again, when you, and they were mainly talking about those psychotropic medications, sort of behavioral altering medications, and product inserts for all those behavior altering medications list even homicidal and suicidal ideation, which is caused by their medication. Again, so this dichotomy between openness in revealing the problems with pharmaceutical products, whether it is medication or vaccines, and then almost like you are not allowed to talk about it, okay? And the recipients of these pharmaceutical products are actually not told. But of course, nobody is stopping them to find out for themselves, because there is still enough freedom and access to information freely, free access to all information which relates to these pharmaceutical products.
Now, Dr. Shona, this question of does the pharmaceutical industry work like the mafia, I think is a very important one. And there is a lot of evidence to suggest that they do. I mean, we've seen the death threats issued against Dr. Tenpenny, but there's a lot of other examples. And just to return to the Andrew Wakefield topic again, Dr. Wakefield was brought down by a series of quite scurrilous and incorrect, really quite libelous articles that were written by a journalist who writes for the Murdoch empire, Brian Deer is his name, and Dr. Wakefield was brought down in a deliberate campaign of these articles, which turned out to have so many mistakes in them, they were so inaccurate. And yet, because this writer was given a platform to put his articles into major newspapers, it became a big story. And then it ended up with Dr. Wakefield being accused of unethical conduct simply for things that had nothing to do with the integrity of his research. And this is what a lot of people don't realise. They only read the heading of the story and they say, oh, Dr. Wakefield was, his licence was revoked. Well, wait a minute. The Lancet retracted his article, but the only unethical behaviour he engaged in was apparently taking blood samples from children at a birthday party with full permission of their families, full permission of their parents, and every parent of every child was delighted with what he did because he was working under a very low budget under very different difficult circumstances. But it was technically against, ethical rules to do that. He was brought down on these technical points, but then Brian Deer came along and just destroyed him. We see that the lobby groups, now there's a lobby group in Australia called the Stop the AVN Network, and I would love to know more about this group. And, if there's anyone out there, any listeners out here who want to do a little bit of personal research, a bit of digging, I would love to find out what the connections are between the Stop the AVN group and Big Pharma, because I guarantee you they will be there. We are just going to break. I'll get you to comment on that when we come back from the break, Dr. Scheibner. You're with Truth News Radio Australia, just going for a short break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You're with Truth News Radio Australia, and I'm talking to Dr. Vera Scheibner about vaccines and the threat to your freedom represented by the fascistic mafia groups who are undermining our free speech and threatening people and doing all kinds of nasty things to make it impossible to have alternative health treatments, to question one particular point of view which is put forward by large corporations and the government. Now, Dr. Scheibner, do you have any knowledge of who is behind the Stop the AVN group in Australia?
Well, first of all, I would like to comment on the Andrew Wakefield. I've heard it from his own mouth that actually at the party they collected poo-poos from children, not blood samples, okay? So there was no invasive medical procedure.
Okay.
Not at all. It was just poo-poos, yes, because they studied the fitness of the children, whether there are traces of blood and all sorts of other problems there.
Oh, that's interesting.
He probably made a mistake, because anybody else who feared or there were indications that they may be subjected to witch hunt resigned from their position, even deregistered themselves, while he wanted to stay part of the establishment. He was actually saying that he's not against vaccination and recommended that the parents give children those MMR vaccines, measles, mumps, rubella vaccines, not as one injection, but as three separate injections. I myself sent him a letter where I explained to him that he is letting parents down because they trust him, and they will go and get these individual vaccines. And he knows himself that those individual measles vaccines actually cause autism. He doesn't like me at all. You know, when we met the second time in New Orleans at a conference organized by medical doctors who have autistic children, and I wanted to shake hands with him, he ran away. And he's about 2 meters tall, and I ran after him, cornered him, and I say, why don't you want to shake hands with me? And he says, they say such things about you. And I said, the same people who may say such things about me say the same things about you. Should I believe them? And he said, oh, okay, all right, you know. So
it's fascinating, isn't it?
It's fascinating, yeah. And you know what I said? And that was before they started this witch hunt against him. That was just after the Lancet article was published. And there was no stormy clouds gathering much. I told him, as a medical doctor, you just touch vaccination and you better start thinking about life after gastroenterology. Now, how prophetic was that? And I walked away, right?
Absolutely, yes. I think Dr. Wakefield may have evolved a bit since then, because he's obviously been through a lot. He now lives in Austin, Texas. And he's been on a number of radio shows which are very avowedly anti-vaccine in their viewpoint. And I think I don't know whether he's changed his basic views or not. I know that in his earlier statements he said he was a strong supporter of the vaccine program and vaccines in principle, but he certainly now is talking more freely to people who are firmly against vaccines. I think at the very least he's realised politically he needs to expand his horizons a little. But it is very important for listeners to understand that Dr. Wakefield was not a vaccine denier. He was not a person who was coming forward and saying all vaccines are wrong. He simply came forward and said this particular vaccine has a problem. But when you consider how they treated him, just for an insider, someone who supports the system, someone who was on their side, simply wanting to bring some, some critical integrity to a process. I mean, it's just due diligence. That's all he was doing, was due diligence as a doctor and as a researcher, and he was crucified for that. And so that gives you a taste of what is being called the mafia style, isn't it, Dr. Scheibner? It's the mafia style.
Absolutely. But, of course, there is more. I was really a bit concerned about him pushing those individual vaccines. So some people gave me his secret email, and I emailed him again. I said, please stop pushing those individual vaccines. Those parents trust you, and so you should not do this. And I emailed it to him. And after that, everybody was surprised that he stopped pushing those individual vaccines. And then recently, I hear him in another interview, and he's again pushing those three vaccines. But, of course, he doesn't realize that pro-vaccination people, they don't like to be told what to do, whether it is pro or against vaccination. So he was mucking up his MMR program by pushing individual vaccines, and they didn't like him for it, you see. So it's a very interesting sort of paradoxical situation here. At the same time, there are medical journals that still allow criticism of that witch hunt of Dr. Benfield to be published. I myself published I mentioned the product inserts for the DPT and MMR vaccine admitting autism and gastrointestinal problems. So they still will publish that. Particularly British Medical Journal seems to know the meaning of freedom of speech. Okay, so
this is a very important point. The product inserts for the MMR vaccines now contain the word autism. Is that correct?
Not autism. It is the DPT vaccine. It's
DPT.
Vaccine, diphtheria, pertussis, and acellular whooping cough vaccine. And then Priorix, which is MMR vaccine, lists gastrointestinal problems, including colitis, okay? Because those children with autism have ulcerative colitis, which results then in so-called leaky gut and malabsorption of nutrients.
Yes.
And then overabsorption of opiates. So it's a very serious chemical imbalance and nutritional imbalance, which then affects the immature brain. The problem is that this all is happening while the brain is not mature enough to withstand an assault of these different chemicals, and it stops the development of the brain. And that is the problem. Autism is either dysfunction of the brain or it is organic damage to the brain, but the underlying problem is gastrointestinal problems. And nobody denies that, okay? They just don't want to say it on television, right?
Yes.
Autism is actually caused by vaccines. Actually, a lot of other modern ills of humanity, health problems of humanity, lead to those childhood vaccines, like, for instance, obesity. Boy, oh boy, aren't they vocal how, you know, people eat too much of sugar. Now, where would 2, 3, 4, 5 months old babies eat too much of sugar, okay? Mm. Or they don't eat McDonald's hamburgers. But Dutch researchers published in 1978 that babies after the first injection of the DPT vaccine developed this significant overproduction of insulin. Hyperinsulinemia is the keyword. And that may rectify itself or may persist for life. And then New England Journal of Medicine published in 1980s that adults with behavioral problems stemming from childhood suffer derangement of sugar metabolism. So it is not too much of sugar. It is the deranged sugar metabolism. And when you have hyperinsulinemia, then actually the insulin is not used to lower the sugar blood sugar level, but it is causing further problems in the body, which also includes hyperactivity and abnormal behavior and things like that. So hyperinsulinemia. And, of course, when you read medical literature, I have a huge file on hyperinsulinemia as such, but very rarely they would quote these Dutch researchers demonstrated that it is the DPT vaccine that causes overproduction of insulin. Then the Lancet published already in 1982 that measles vaccine causes derangement of low and high density lipids, cholesterol. So what causes this very prevalent overproduction or high level of cholesterol, or rather the range ratio of high and low density lipids. It's the measles vaccine.
We're just going to break. Sorry to cut in. We're going to break. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. We'll be right back for one more segment. Stay with us. And we are talking about vaccines today. It's, you know, it's such a dense topic. There are so many threads I want to follow with this, Dr. Scheibner. I want to just briefly address the question of the Stop the AVN movement. Do you know much about them? Do you know who they are? Do you know how they got started? I know that it was started as a response to Meryl Dorey's group and website, the Australian Vaccination Network. I've had Meryl Dorey on my show a couple of times. I know that the there have been forces at work trying to put her out of business for many years, and they've come at her in various different ways. The Stop the AVN is the latest. Do you know anything about it?
Well, I am not a member of AVN, and I actually, strangely enough, have nothing to do with any organizations. I don't believe that's the way to go. I am on my own. Yeah. I am a researcher. I publish wherever I can. I was also invited by the Royal Australian College of General Practitioners for 2 years to participate in postgraduate training of GPs to present the case against vaccination, okay? Mm. And they told me, no censorship, just say whatever you like. And they introduced me as the top world expert on vaccination issues, right? And then I was also invited to a pro-vaccination conference in 1991 or 92 in Canberra. After I was interviewed on one of the commercial channels with the convener of that conference. And by the time with my husband, late husband, Leif Carson, he died in 1994. Yes. He was the biomedical engineer, electronics engineer who developed CotWatch, the breathing monitor, which was my introduction into the scene of vaccines. And when we were waiting in the waiting room to get on the set, I showed him the graphs we had, computer printouts, and he was a clever, intelligent man, and he knew exactly the meaning of it, and he was going to push for mandatory vaccination. But then, after seeing those graphs, and we went on the set, he didn't mention mandatory vaccination once. And when we were finished, and then we were saying goodbye to each other, he said that I see that you offered a lecture for the conference. Consider it accepted. I want you to come. And, you know, they accepted it even though I submitted it a week after the deadline. I didn't even know. I was actually staying in the same hotel as a doctor from New Zealand. And he says, I don't know, you know, those organizers, I wanted to present a talk, and they told me that it's already after the deadline, but just submit it and we shall see. And then they sent him a letter that since he offered it after the deadline, then they can't accept it. Well, I didn't have the heart to tell him that they accepted my article, even though I submitted it a week after the deadline. And I must tell you that of all those 300-odd people who attended the conference, well, people were standing in the aisles. The room was full. Everybody who was anybody came to hear my 15-minute presentation of the evidence for the link between DPT vaccination and CODEST. I was showing those graphs. And then after the conference, I usually stand in the middle of the room. I don't huddle near the periphery. And suddenly one person came to me and said, you know, I had always had niggling feelings about those vaccines. Mm. And suddenly I was surrounded by a large group of people all patting me on the shoulder and congratulating me.
That is extremely inspiring. Very, very, very great to hear that you were able to actually change people's minds, because that's what we're trying to do. That's what I'm trying to do with this show. And it is the toughest thing. It is the greatest achievement if you can actually say you can do that. And I think you achieved it because you're very balanced. You're very clear. You're unemotional, but you're very certain about what you have to say. And I think, you know, separating the emotive aspects of it from the facts is very important. Of course, the powers that be always like to use the emotive effect to garner support. So, you know, the terrible anguish of a family whose child died of whooping cough is raised before you as something to bind you to one particular point of view. The need, I think, is there to bring this with facts. And I'd just like to tell you one bit of research I did, which I found very disturbing, into the civil liberties question in Australia of vaccines. There is a group called Civil Liberties Australia, and I think you should probably get in touch with them, and I would certainly like to help you in this regard, because this group is dedicated to civil liberties. However, their position on vaccines is draconian. And this group, Civil Liberties Australia, actually endorses mandatory vaccines, which are not even in our law. But the Civil Liberties Australia actually would like our laws to be even more extreme than they currently are, if you read their FAQ articles on their position on vaccines. It's quite extraordinary, isn't it?
Well, you see, I read their material. They let their personal opinions cloud their vision, because civil liberties include also freedom from medical tyranny. Yes. And that's a very good way of describing it. And as I said, Australian Constitution doesn't allow any medical procedure to be mandated, like to brought in by civil conscription. It only allows the government to provide medical and hospital services. It doesn't allow to actually push any one procedure such as vaccine. So I would welcome if I could talk to them, because from the material that I read, I can see that, number one, they haven't read a single medical paper, because they don't quote any medical papers. It is just like a high school essay about vaccination, totally meaningless statements. And they allow their personal opinions to cloud their vision.
Indeed. And the strongest argument that they have is this argument of the greater good. And this is what is constantly used by the lobbyists who want to bring in mandatory vaccinations, is the argument of the greater good. And what it means is that that even if there are the odd reaction to vaccines, even if some people aren't helped by vaccines, they believe that it's necessary for the greater good. But this becomes a deep philosophical problem, and it is a problem of society and the philosophy of politics, or the philosophy of society, to understand whether the argument of the greater good is fallacious.
Yeah. You see, there is no such thing as greater good from vaccines, because actually all those outbreaks occur in the vaccinated children. Even 2 days ago, there was some snippet on television saying that there is an outbreak of whooping cough, and even the vaccinated children get it. Yes. Even the vaccinated, it is mainly the vaccinated that get all these diseases. Actually, the bacteria and viruses in vaccines mutated and they evade the vaccines. They got immune to vaccines, just as antibiotics. Bacteria got immune to antibiotics. Actually, Fleming, one of the co-discoverer of penicillin, he warned about this. He held the release for mass use of penicillin for a couple of decades, because he predicted that the bacteria will get immune, resistant to antibiotics, and how right he was. So, again, all those outbreaks occur in the vaccinated, 100% vaccinated populations, and they had outbreaks of whooping cough and measles and mumps and all those so-called vaccine-preventable diseases. This is what organizations that are looking after, preservation of competition and et cetera, they should look into it, because that's false advertising. vaccine preventable disease is a false advertising. There is no such thing as vaccine preventable disease. And vaccines, they destroy the immune system, meaning that babies born to mothers who were vaccinated in their childhood have no transplacentally transmitted immunity, and that's why little babies are getting whooping cough. When they show a baby coughing with whooping cough, well, that's a consequence of vaccination, because their mother, vaccinated mother, had no transplacentally transmitted immunity. And also, children get whooping cough from the vaccine. When individual states in the United States in the mid-70s started mandating vaccination for enrollment to school, the incidence of whooping cough went up 300%, threefold. Yeah. Measles was on the way out very much in the late 50s and early 60s when they started running this measles vaccine. And immediately after they started measles vaccination, also measles incidence went up 300%. And the best evidence for this is the Amish, a religious group that lives right across the United States, and they claim religious exemption. So they didn't have a single case of measles for 18 years, between 1979 and 1982, and they were unvaccinated. At the same time, the well-vaccinated non-Amish communities experienced regular 2-3-year epidemics of measles, which means that's the ultimate evidence that vaccines was keeping measles alive and kicking. And all vaccines cause the very disease that they are supposed to prevent. So they vaccination destroys the immunity to the targeted disease, but also increases susceptibility to the diseases and also to bacteria-related and unrelated bacterial and viral infections. That's why children have these new infectious diseases, which are caused by much more virulent bacteria and viruses, and it is the effect of the vaccines. So another thing which must be addressed, that particularly the polio vaccine is still contaminated by monkey viruses like SV40, which is the best researched. And they are saying that the SV40 is not in any polio vaccines after 1961 or 64. That's not true, because in year 2000, a lawyer published that Lederle, one company that produces polio vaccine, during a court case, under oath admitted that they can't guarantee that all their polio vaccine stocks are...
I'm terribly sorry, Vera, we have run out of time. I would love to hear the rest of that. We are at the end of the hour. I will get you on again. Thank you so much for what you've said today. It's very important.
My pleasure. And one thing, I only quote medical papers.
Indeed, and we will always enforce that. You're with Truth News Radio Australia. That's our show for this week. We will be back next week. See you then.